Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's not like Lori Lightfoot didn't know being mayor of Chicago would be a tough job. She took over in a fiscal crisis. But no one can deny her first 2 years have been a challenge. And you've heard a lot of reporting on that. So if we're going to sit down with the mayor at this point, it might be better to ask, what now? Well, we will. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. From the schools to the roads and bridges to racial unrest, pension debt, and pandemics, there's no shortage of things to talk about with Lori Lightfoot. Even the occasion of talking to the mayor generated headlines this year, and we'll want to talk about that too. But first, let me point out that this interview is being conducted at the mayor's City Hall offices, and this is the first full At Issue program to be recorded face-to-face since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. And it seems like forever ago. But we will want to talk about how we're doing. And thank you, Mayor Lightfoot, for having me in.
It's my pleasure.
And we're both fully vaccinated. We should probably start with the things that were making headlines as the week was wrapping up. Probably the premier topic was the Illinois Senate's passage of legislation that would eventually mean creation of a fully elected school board. Now, I will say we in the media probably often, too often, reduced this debate over the proposal to shorthand. And the way the shorthand goes is, on the one side, some state lawmakers and the teachers union want a 21-member elected school board. On the other side, Mayor Lori Lightfoot and her allies don't want an elected board, but used to. Why isn't it quite that simple?
Well, because first and foremost, what we need to be thinking about, and it never seems to come up in the discussion, is what's in the best interest of our children? What's in the best interest of the almost 400,000 students who call the Chicago Public Schools their home? Schools in our city are more than just places where you learn the basics of ABCs and math. They are, in many instances, a safe place, a place where children get a whole lot more than just a book education. It's a place where they go to get fed, where they find safety and shelter, where that may be the community convening place for them when circumstances are tougher outside of the schoolhouse. So it's a big, important issue when we're talking about governance change of Chicago Public Schools, the most consequential that's happened in probably 30-plus years. What I know is that we have to put our kids first. We've got to listen to the parents who feel disenfranchised in making sure that a governance structure actually gives parents an opportunity to have a seat at the table and a voice, and all parents, not just U.S. citizens, but all parents. I can't support any kind of remedy that disenfranchises undocumented residents as the bill passed by the Senate does. 21. Let's just start with that. The largest fully elected school board in the country has a membership of 9, not 21. The largest school board in the country, which is New York City and fully appointed, has 13. So we're talking about creating the superstructure that is going to be fractious, that I think is going to have a hard time governing. It doesn't make any sense. It's not smart for our system. And what I worry about is that everything that got loaded up at the last minute, like a Christmas tree, is going to cause harm, instability, and fundamentally not advance the cause of educating our children, particularly coming out of a pandemic when learning loss is real and deep and profound, where achievement gaps have opened up and exacerbated. None of those conversations are happening when they should be. That should be front and center, and everything else should be structured around supporting our students. A 21-member school board that doesn't allow for all parent voices, that doesn't account for the symbiotic relationship between the city of Chicago and CPS to the tune of $500 million plus increasing each year, none of those issues are accounted for in the bill that passed the Illinois Senate. And that's a mistake.
And we have not talked about the other issue that hangs out there, and that is control, and whether and how you should have control of that process, not just the process, but of the actual structure. That is an issue too, is it not?
Well, it is. I favor a hybrid model, having now been mayor for 2 years and gone through a lot of issues with the public schools. It's clear to me that a hybrid model is the best choice, and I'm going to keep fighting for that.
But should people who have been appointed by you have the superior weight on a panel like
that? Well, I think so. If our dollars are subsidizing CPS in the way that they have been, which is $500 million every year and increasing in the out years, of course there should be mayoral influence over the decision-making of the public school board, of course. That's what the people elected me to do.
This bill is going back to the House, the Illinois House. That is a body that passed a measure that is probably even less like what you wanted to see. So what do you do now?
Well, I think the people who have really been activated around this issue are going to continue lobbying for a better result. The bill that passed the Senate has a lot of significant problems with it that will not help support, I think, the core values that we need to be articulating around supporting our young people, supporting our students. And I'm hopeful that that activism around, I think, a core set of values that are important and the outreach to legislators will get us to a better result. But this is just one milestone on a longer journey.
And that journey.
And ultimately, the voters are going to have the final say.
Didn't the voters have, in some ways, a say in saying that they wanted an elected board?
No, I don't think that question has ever been put fully to residents of the city. And what I know is a number of parent-focused focus groups that educated groups of parents around the options, what came back time and time again was a hybrid. They wanted an elected portion of it, but they wanted mayoral accountability. I haven't seen a single poll of any credibility that suggests that they want the mayor and the city council to have no role, no say in the governance of CPS. That's just not reality for the voters in Chicago, and certainly not the parents.
I do want to turn to other seasonal topics, or at least one, and that is the violence that we have seen in the streets mm-hmm. around the city. Shootings were down over the Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. At the point that we're recording this, we have no idea what this weekend looks like, but no one is pretending gun violence is going to vanish. What is the difference in the strategy this year that you are hoping holds through the coming weekends?
So we started planning for summer violence really back in January, looking at historical trends, looking at the areas in the city that were most challenged. And in looking at that data, that information, it became clear to me that there were specific geographic areas of the city that accounted for an overwhelming amount of violence. So what we've done this summer that's different from before is we are focusing on 15 beats, that's sub-geographic areas, in the west side and the south side. And we're really taking a whole-of-government approach, not just what can law enforcement do, but what can city government, along with trusted partners in these areas. So we've had working groups that have divided up these 15 beats into four zones, two on the west side, two on the south side. And every week, these working groups that are city government from parks and schools and libraries, public health, Department of Family Support Services, along with trusted community partners, are looking at what the assets and opportunities are, literally down to the block level, because the goal is, of course, laying a foundation for peace. That's got to be done in partnership with the police department and other law enforcement, but holding that territory by investing in the people, in the families, in the businesses, to provide the foundation for lasting, permanent peace in these areas. These neighborhoods, these beats that we're talking about, the 15 of them, account for about 30% of the violence in the city. So if we can show a marked reduction in those areas, we are going to, I think, really turn the story of public safety in the city.
But the word you used, investment, that is something that can make a difference in neighborhoods, but how much does that cost? Do we have the resources to sustain what's needed?
Investment comes in a lot of different forms. One is, the most important thing is being present in these neighborhoods and showing the people there who are of goodwill, want to live the same kind of peaceful life that you and I do, that they are seen and heard and valued. That's very, very important. But also, we've got a lot of assets on the ground, but what we haven't done is break down the silos and focus those assets in a concentrated way, in a coordinated way, in a collaborative way. And yes, of course, other dollars and cents need to be invested, but there's a lot of richness of resources in some of these areas, but it hasn't been coordinated in the way that we're doing it now.
As we have known over the years, these situations can turn on a dime. You can have a bad weekend out of nowhere.
Sure.
What if it doesn't work? Is there a plan B?
Well, I mean, let's be hopeful and optimistic. We're going to be calibrating literally on a daily basis, and in some instances, an hour-by-hour basis. The reason that this is different is not because we've abandoned everything that we've traditionally done, but we're adding to. And we're flexible and nimble enough with the rapid response teams that are built into this process that if we need to adjust, we will adjust. This is not a static strategy. It's got to be nimble, but that's why it's so important to be connected with residents and stakeholders on the ground in these neighborhoods. So if we see something coming, a conflict building, then we have strategies to be able to intervene and turn it around and hopefully mitigate it altogether.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and we are recording this program at her City Hall office. I do want to turn to another problem involving police that has been debated and discussed at length, and that would be the proposals for police accountability. Mm-hmm. There were competing plans between, and I won't go through the acronyms, but GAPA and CPAC. How can you come to a meeting of the minds about civilian oversight, something that has been negotiated over for literally years?
Well, look, I don't think there's any dispute that having more direct civilian oversight of the police department is a good thing. It is. I've always supported that going back to my days leading the Police Accountability Task Force. But as the saying goes, the devil's in the details. You've asked me a lot of questions here today about public safety. The mayor has to be able to answer those questions. I have to be the convener and drive resources into neighborhoods that are needed most. Yes, civilian oversight is important, but the buck stops with me because that's what people elected me to do. The two important things that are top of mind for voters when they go to vote for a mayor of the city of Chicago are schools, public safety, and I'll add a third, finances. to divorce the mayor from that role that the voters expect makes no sense. So I think what we've done with our proposal is struck the right balance, standing up civilian oversight, giving them broad authorities to ask questions, to probe, being involved in hiring and firing of the police superintendent, the police board president, as well as the head of the civilian office of police accountability, but ultimately having the responsibility lie with the mayor, in this instance, obviously, that's me, but future mayors, because the buck does stop with the mayor.
But are there not things where the public, where civilian oversight could play a larger role, whether it be in shaping or proposing police policies?
Yeah, and that's all in the proposal that we put forward. But it, where there's a dispute, ultimately the mayor has to be the one to be the final arbiter of whatever the dispute is. The goal should be not to look for the worst case scenario. The goal should be to figure out a pathway where civilians and the police are working as harmoniously as possible. And I think our proposal really lays the groundwork for that. We have proposed a network of civilian oversight involvement throughout Chicago in every police district, and a structure for really engaging residents at the grassroots level about the issues that are uniquely situated in particular neighborhoods around public safety. Those issues have to be heard, and we've created a structure where that's more formalized now than what it really ever has historically been, then that feeds up to the oversight body. That's, I think, where really the rubber meets the road.
What prevents a structure like that, though, from becoming one where people have their say, come out and express themselves, mm-hmm. and in the end, a chief executive, whether it's you or anybody else, and frankly, I think people could look up and down the history of the city and see times when it would be one way and times when it would be another, where that mayor doesn't simply say, I'm going to go a completely different direction, and people feel as if they haven't been heard.
Well, I think what we have to do is make sure that there's real engagement. And public safety can't be something where only the loudest voices get heard. And unfortunately, in the time that we're in, that seems to be the prevailing sentiment. But what that ends up doing is closing out those people who may not have a megaphone or a platform, but are every bit as invested and interested in things like public school or public safety. So we've got to create a space for those voices also to be heard, to debate, to strategize, to argue for positions, and then again, hopefully come to some consensus on some basic issues around public safety and what at the neighborhood level is needed. No one needs to decree that from on high. A mayor doesn't and shouldn't decree that from on high. There's got to be engagement with the local stakeholders because they are uniquely qualified to say, here's what our issues are. We've got this building. We've got this business on my block. And that may be a different set of issues than the next neighborhood over. We've got to allow space for those things to be resolved at the local level. And then if there needs to be something, a larger strategy, then obviously we have to have space for that as well.
So the way the structure is set up, there are things that could be initiated at the district level, for example, that might never reach the higher end, but could people really be heard? I mean, how do you keep?
Yeah, of course.
How do you get those quieter voices to be heard?
Well, first of all, you've got to come to the table in good faith, and then you've got to reach people where they are. The average person is worried about, do I have a job? Am I going to be able to pay my bills? Am I going to have a good quality of life? But we've got to make sure that the space is there for those voices to be heard. And there's got to be a concerted effort on the part of the people who will be in charge of sorting through those issues at the local level, that they're actually engaged in doing outreach. I think there's a level of attention and activism in our city that we may not have seen for a long time. And people are concerned about public safety. I know that from my own experience. I know that from going out into communities, going to roll calls, going to community meetings. Public safety is top of mind for most residents in our city. So I don't think there will be a lack of attention, a lack of interest on the part of our residents. The question is, how do we make sure that we create that space for those voices to be heard? And that's what our proposal does.
Talking about activism, I want to turn to things happening in this building because I think you are maybe could be benefiting from or being bedeviled by having a more active and vocal city council than some of your predecessors have had, than many of your predecessors have had. And that has led to it seeming to be a much more contentious relationship than we've seen of late. Is that a fair way of characterizing it?
It's definitely a different dynamic than I think it has historically been, or in recent times. Obviously, you know, let us not forget the first term of Harold Washington. I don't think the city has seen anything like that, and hopefully we'll never see anything like that again in our time. You know, I came into office saying, and I still believe it, I don't want or need a rubber stamp city council. You and the media are very animated by who's up, who's down, and many times the reality is very different than what the reporting is. Yes, there are those who have come into office believing that their responsibility is to be an activist, to be a social media influencer. I think most people want to get the job done. They want to do right by their residents. They want to make sure that they're taking care of constituent needs. And I do think that that's the prevailing sentiment, certainly of a working majority of the members of the city council. Not all of them. And those people show themselves on a regular basis. But I think for the vast majority, they're just trying to do what is in the best interest of their constituents, their residents, and have the space under my administration to voice their concerns and not feel like they're afraid of what the mayor is going to say or do.
Several aldermen quietly are grumbling about something that I think 20th Ward Alderman Jeanette Taylor actually voiced this week, and that was that she suggested that it's sometimes hard to work with you because she says you're a one-woman show prepared to go it alone. That you aren't troubled if aldermen are in some ways opposed to you. Is that fair?
I don't think that all of that is accurate. So let me put it this way. I have a probably high tolerance for dissent. I think it's just part of the process. Part of that, I'm sure, comes from my years working as a trial lawyer. Conflict is part of the name of the game, and I don't cower from that. And I think that that is surprising to many and confounding to others. But we try to engage with the aldermen. I would, if you ask people who have worked in prior administrations, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find another administration where we regularly give all aldermen, not just a select few, but all aldermen, detailed briefings on every policy issue. We meet on a regular basis, and I meet on a regular basis with as many aldermen as I possibly can. We've convened regional meetings with aldermen. So what I've come to know in 2 years in the job, that people complaining, unfortunately, comes with the territory. But what I know is there's no other mayor in my memory, going back several mayors, that has done more to try to engage members of the city council. But I can't force them to come to meetings. I can't force them to read their emails. I can't force them to get on calls. But we're going to keep making that effort because I think that's the right thing to do.
I think one thing that if there's any theme we've heard, it's that progressive, well, people who consider themselves progressives, were elated when you were elected. And are you, do you sometimes feel pressure from the expectations of what people expect from someone? And I suspect that Barack Obama also had to deal with that too. Mm-hmm. But is that, I mean, and for, even for yourself, are there things you can't do or want that you might have wanted to do that the reality of the job means that people are going to be disappointed?
Of course people are going to be disappointed because not everybody is going to get every wish fulfilled. Campaigning is very different than governing, and particularly governing in the face of a massive fiscal crisis, which we have not solved. Pensions are still a significant issue. And then add on to all of that, a global pandemic, which we have made significant progress, and I'm proud of what we did to keep Chicagoans safe and save lives that otherwise might have been lost. And then you have historic civic uprising and this very important conversation that we're having, which continues around systemic racism, at a time when our public discourse is probably the most polarized of my almost 60 years living. So yes, there's going to be conflict. Yes, there are going to be people that are angry. What I try to do every day is really focus on what's my values? Why did I seek this office? What can I be doing every single day to advance the cause of those who don't have a platform, who need the government to work for them? That's what I focus on. The rest will take care of itself.
And I wish I had left more time for us to talk about this, but the racial tensions and your full disclosure, I am an African-American reporter, also a City Hall regular, mm-hmm. but we're having this interview. So, yes, I suppose...
You and I talk with some frequency, maybe not as much as we can or should, but yeah. Look, but the elephant in the room, right? On the occasion of my 2 years in office, I made a determination that I wanted to make a powerful statement about the whiteness of the City Hall Press Corps, but not just the City Hall Press Corps, newsrooms all across the city. If I don't say that as an African-American mayor, who's going to? And the fact of the matter is, I look out across the podium at the people who regularly cover me. I don't see many people that look like me, black or brown, that come from a very different set of circumstances and perspectives. And the truth is, all of us have bias. Many of us overt, but most of us implicit. And the media plays such an important and vital role in our democracy. You are opining about the issues of the day, and you're doing that based upon your life's experience and your perspectives. It makes no sense to me that in 2021, in a city like Chicago, that we don't have more diverse voices covering the mayor, the county board president, our governor. And that is not the reality. And you can't tell me that we lack talent, that we lack diverse voices. And some of the crazy, and I'll say it, ignorant and racist things that were said by some of your colleagues that, well, she just wants that because the black and brown reporters won't ask tough questions. I mean, how incredibly insulting is that? The mayor is just doing payback. Nonsense. The day after, we went back to form. But I think and I hope I've ignited a very important conversation about why our media has to reflect the diversity of our times in our city, and it doesn't. And I'm going to keep talking about it. Making people uncomfortable? Too bad. It's an issue that has to be put on the table, and I am the exact right person to do that, and we've done it. And I think we're going to see, and I hope we're going to see, some changes as a result.
And we will talk about them if we do, or even if we don't. Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot, for spending the half hour with me. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. There should be a link a little ways down the homepage. You can also find our podcast on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dullamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.